Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Wednesday Conversation. I'm Bethany Gilbert. Today, we are going back into the archives to bring you an episode that we actually just recorded last year. You might remember it. It's called Children in Church. And we thought that this episode would be good to feature right now as children ministries in most of our churches are closed and kids are sitting in church with their parents. So enjoy. Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Wednesday Conversation. I'm Bethany Gilbert, and I'm here with Pastor Bob Thune and Pastor Dusty White of Corumdale Church and Pastor Chris Hemmelman of First City Church. Every Wednesday, we sit down to talk about how the gospel of Jesus Christ connects to the questions and issues of everyday life. And today, we're talking about children in worship. We actually got an email from a listener. They wrote in asking us to talk about this. So here's their email. He said, I would love to hear Bob and the Wednesday Conversation crew's thoughts on whether children should sit through big church or attend a children's church. Wouldn't it benefit our children to be present to see their parents participating in worship, engaging fellow believers, and submitting to the leadership and guidance of their pastor, even if they're bored, or if it's harder for their parents to focus when they're present? Is that not a hill we should die on when we have a vibrant and intentional children's ministry at our church?
Excellent question, listener. Thank you. Hey, but before we get to that, I want to welcome a new voice on the Wednesday Conversation podcast, Dusty White.
Yeah. Dusty's back.
Dusty is back. You got to go deep into the archives to hear my voice.
Way back.
It's been too long.
Yeah. Holy cow.
It's good to be back. Yeah. It's good to be here.
Hey, welcome back. Chris, welcome back. I mean, I know you were here for the last few that we did, but you also have, seems like, been out for a month or so.
I think it's just we're in a new recording space, so everything just feels
Do you like
new.
It?
It's very
like
nice.
It. Do you like our new? We're this in our new studio, our new studio space, which
and
is exciting.
It doesn't feel like pop-up studio.
Like, no, it's
we,
like
we
real.
Have in the past. It's
or
like legit.
Like closed in on a small little stage with curtains around.
People coming in and out.
Yes.
And slamming doors and making loud noises in the background, which happened regularly, and Bethany, with her magic, just deleted them right out of the podcast. It was amazing. Okay, so this is a good question. And actually, one we've thought about frequently in the history of our church. And so I think the way to tackle it is to start off by a theological point that I think is too often missed in thinking about this question, and that is it's important that we start with who does God give primary responsibility for the discipleship, training, and spiritual nurture of children? And the answer to that is parents are given primary biblical responsibility for that. It's important that we keep that straight, because if churches do not think about that theologically, what they often end up doing is just pragmatically going, okay, what do we need? We got a lot of kids. And then they, you know, start building kids ministry around how do we entertain the kids? How do we, you know, pragmatically deal with all the children that we have? And in what happens is the role of the parents as spiritual shapers and spiritual leaders becomes diminished. And then what we get is a lot of what we've seen in evangelicalism, which is parents that kind of drop their kids off at the church, expect the kid to the church to kind of disciple their kids, abdicate their biblical God-given responsibility to disciple, train, nurture, and lead. And so I think this question seems to be coming out of a place that says, hey, how do we make sure we're not doing that? How do we make sure that we are, as parents, really taking seriously the role God's given us to be the primary shapers and nurturers of our children? So I think before we even get into the question of like, should kids sit through adult church or whatever, it's important to say, well, at the start, we need to say parents need to embrace their primary responsibility. And that primary responsibility, by the way, goes 0 to 18. It's not like when your kid turns 12, you can sort of go, well, hey, now they're in middle school. Glad there's some other people around to disciple them.
Yeah, that's why this is such a good question too, especially even for the church to answer as well as parents, right? Because depending on what kind of church you're in, you'll find churches that cater to these things, right? You have churches where, well, we want to get the parents in the door, so let's take care of the kids.
And
you
churches have other, with like water parks and
yeah,
crazy stuff.
Yeah. And then you have other churches that would do away with all that, right? And say, get the kids in with the adults the whole time. So it's important. I'm really grateful for this question.
The simple answer we have, and Chris, I'll let you speak to how First City's thinking through this, but we've adopted a middle way. There's actually a whole movement called the National Center for Family Integrated Churches that is big into like, you should not have kids ministry. The whole church should be together. I respect some of the convictions behind that movement. What I have seen is they never reach non-Christians with kids because no pagan walking in the doors with an unruly kid wants to deal with their kid having to sit through a church service or has raised their child in a way that they would even know how to do that. And so what tends to happen in those churches is you have a bunch of people who share those convictions about family and church, but those churches don't tend to be very missionally focused. And if they do start reaching people, they start having to ask difficult questions of, okay, what about the single mom who's raising some kids by herself and there's not a dad in the home? And so there's a blended family or a split family situation. Like you just start dealing with, okay, well, what if dad's not a Christian, but mom is, you know, how do you, what dynamics of spiritual formation start coming into play? So that's on the one side, the people who would say kids, you know, family should be integrated in the church. Then on the other side, as you point out, Dusty, you have churches that aren't even thinking about this theologically and just thinking, hey, how do we entertain some kids? And they're not asking the question, how do children become integrated in the life of the church? And what is the parent's responsibility? How do we honor that? So we've taken a middle way that says, you'll hear me say frequently, hey, your kids are welcome in the church gathering. And in fact, I really like it when parents have kids in the service. At the same time, we do offer Cormdale kids. And part of the reason we do that is, well, twofold. One, because we think it's a good way to be missionaries in the culture that we live in and invite in families who aren't used to sitting through a church service and so need some age-appropriate training for their kids, but also for our own children, getting them in a context where they can hear an age-appropriate Bible teaching and be with other kids and be exposed to adult leaders who love Jesus and are trying to help them love Jesus. I think as long as that's not taking away the role of the parents or doing their job for them, as long as it's a secondary way of training and teaching, I think it accomplishes something really valuable in a kid's life. If you grew up in a healthy church, I know this is your story, Dusty, this is my story. If you had kids ministry leaders or youth ministry leaders who were influential in your life, usually you have good stories to tell about the ways that those people were, you know, alongside of your parents, key spiritual influences in your life. And that's important, especially as kids get older and get to those more adolescent ages where they need other role models besides mom and dad, other people who they can look to for insight and for help and for spiritual counsel and accountability. And so we've kind of said, we're not going to not have a kids ministry, but we're also not going to say, gosh, your kid's not welcome in church. We're going to say, hey, moms and dads, your kids are always welcome in the church service, but we also do provide a really gospel-driven and sort of convictional kids ministry that sees its role as coming alongside parents.
Yeah, we have the same approach mindset, both the missional side and in our context, you know, families is ground zero. I mean, we have a lot of kids at First City and reaching people through kids is a huge part of our missional strategy. So having that, really, we do really see that as mission, but we also recognize this opportunity to come alongside parents. And we're very explicit about that. I mean, our mission statement for First City Kids, it says to come alongside parents to disciple. So we don't see this as replacing what parents do. It's very much meant to supplement what they do, to fold into what they're doing at home. The other piece of this that we try to emphasize is this idea that kids are part of the church now, that if you as parents are Christians and you belong to the church, your kids belong to the church too. And we're not necessarily talking about like official membership, but just you are part of the community. And so you very much have a place in the life of the community. And this is why kids are present in gospel community. And this is why on Sundays, while we have First City Kids, it's cut off at age 8. And so we recognize, hey, when they get to a certain age, we want them to be integrated into the service. A couple other things that we do. One, every fifth Sunday, so just we switched it around, but just this past Sunday, we shut down our kids, or we don't have kids, and when all the kids come and worship together. So we say it's our family Sunday. Everybody's together. I preach a little bit shorter. We sing a few more songs. We typically integrate the kids into the service in different ways. Had a girl read a scripture passage this last Sunday. So we want to create an environment that really highlights that we're one family, one church. The kids are part of the church now. They participate now. So we want to create structures that emphasize that value that we have as a church. Interestingly enough, so this will have happened when this podcast airs, but we're switching even how we have kids in the service on a regular Sunday. So before, kids would go to First City Kids right at the beginning. Parents would check them in and then come to the worship service. Well, now we're having ages 4 through 8 in the worship service, singing songs in the front half. During the greeting time, they'll be dismissed to go back to First City Kids. And so this is a way that, as we've thought and prayed about how else can we express this value that we want parents worshiping, or excuse me, children worshiping with their parents, and the sense that we're one church, one family. Thought, hey, let's just bring them into the worship service a little bit more. And so that's why when they transition to the main worship service, they've experienced it a little bit more than once a quarter. They kind of know what it means to go through a liturgy. So all these things that we've tried to work through the past almost 4 years now, but very much same philosophy, Bob, as Cormdale.
I really like, as I'm listening to you guys, I really like what you're saying about the intentionality behind mission. So Bob, even at your comment a minute ago about how you share some of those convictions, that's fantastic. But when I'm thinking about that, and when I'm thinking about what you just said, Chris, it's this reality that we live in this culture where kids are a nuisance, right? And so if adults are going to go somewhere, they kind of want their kids taken care of, or I might come in wondering what you're going to think of me and my three little rascals, right? So It's really important for the outward face of the church to say, no, we welcome all ages. This is our community. This is your community. Yeah. Your kids aren't in the way here. I also do think that it's important. There's no hard, fast rules here, right? On like how churches should do this. But I do think, especially just raising these kids that the Lord's given JC and I, is kids can absorb so much from 0 to 12, 0 to 13.
Yeah.
And if I can get basic gospel truth into them week in and week out in an age appropriate way, where it just kind of becomes their intuition, it becomes their subconscious, man, I want to be in a place like that. Now, at the same time, all those kids have to see mom and dad worshiping the Lord in a vibrant way to believe it and to carry it on.
Yeah. I think that's the wrong question to ask is, and the way this question is sometimes phrased is, can kids absorb everything that's going on in a worship service? The answer is no, of course they can't. Does that mean it's not formative? No, it's very formative. One of the most formative things for kids is to see adults worshiping Jesus regularly, even if it goes over their heads, even if they're not sure what's going on. The experience of being in the room with adults taking God seriously is a hugely formative experience. So we should not think of this as even the phrase age appropriate can be used wrongly, right? Well, if it's not age appropriate, well, listen, is it important for a 6-year-old to hear truth in a way that a 6-year-old can encounter? Sure it is. But it's also important for a 6-year-old to see adults worshiping Jesus and using big words that they don't quite understand yet. Mm-hmm. But that makes a huge impact on a child in a way that I think is irreplaceable. So in our sort of culture that's very much about like, is everybody getting what everybody needs in the way that they think they need it? Sometimes those questions can be asked in a wrong way that doesn't take into account the formational effect of just being in a room and watching adults do some things.
Yeah. If we believe that discipleship is much caught as taught, we recognize that it's not just this cognitive aspect of discipleship for kids. It really is being around adults, the atmosphere, the they see their parents engaging bodily in worship, and their attitude and tone, all those things matter significantly in discipleship. And so it even, I think, can somewhat betray a faulty view of formation if we think it's all cognitive.
I think music especially is super important for kids. When parents and adults and kids can all be singing the same stuff, that's going to bring a ton of formation into our kids. What is your guys's, as preachers, right? Like you guys do the majority of preaching at both of your churches. What's your encouragement to the mom and dad who are like, man, we want to bring our kids in. It would be nice, but our kids are crazy. So what do you recommend for like, we're going to make it 15 minutes. We're going to be 15 minutes deep into the sermon before my kid goes crazy. What do I do then?
Well, I'm going to say unpopular things right now.
Bob will just tell them to be quiet.
No, here's what I'm going to say. You as a parent don't get to use the excuse, my kid is crazy, because what that means is you have a responsibility then to be more persistent in discipline and training. Now, if you've abdicated your responsibility here for long enough, it can be really difficult to get it back. But this is why it's actually really important at age 3, 4, 5 to start training your kids to sit still in a room for an extended period of time without being entertained and without looking at a screen and without having something to do. Kids are actually capable of doing that. And what part of the reason that we are not as good at doing this as our ancestors were is because our ancestors just did a better job with discipline and training, and kids could sit through an adult gathering and not be disruptive and unruly. Now, I realize every situation is unique, and I'm not trying to guilt you into, oh, well, if your kid's, you know, a little bit of a unruly kid, then, shame on you. But I am saying I want parents to take seriously the responsibility that God means for there to be a component of, in a social setting like a church service, you should be training your kid to have enough of a sense of the importance and the significance of what's going on that they can sit quietly. Now, at the same time, you know, for those moments when just, you know, a kid's melting down or they didn't get enough sleep or, you know, there's just one of those situations, I would just say, well, you know, just be a, do not, please don't let your kid distract everyone around them, right? Because that's like where it gets haywire for me as a preacher is when I realize like I've lost the whole room because there's a 4-year-old melting down over here and no one's doing anything about it. Like sometimes you got to pick your kid up, take him out in the hallway, calm him down. You know, there's this balance of what are my kids experiencing here and how am I honoring the other people in the room by what I do in this moment. And so for the people who are just like, well, my kid's here and God bless them for being here and I don't care if they're yelling and screaming and being disruptive. Well, you should care about that because it actually, you need to honor the other people in the room and the moment and what the Spirit of God is doing and not just be happy that your kid's in the room. So there's a couple pieces there of, sort of the importance of discipline and training, the God-given responsibility that parents have in that regard, and also the importance of just honoring the people around you, you know?
You don't got anything to add, Chris?
Nothing to add. I mean, I think that's good. I mean, the bottom line is it is on parents to train their kids how to engage that space well. And you may go through a period of time where you're not necessarily locked in 100% to the sermon because you are training your child, but that investment for however many weeks or months to get them to where they're appropriately still and engaged will pay off for years to come. And so I want to just encourage parents, hey, go through the hard work of preparing your child and training your child. And yeah, it may mean you're not hearing as much for a time. That's why we have podcasts. One of the blessings of podcasts, but it will pay off eventually. It will, you will reap the benefit long term. And so don't let sort of the short term discomfort, keep you from investing long term.
All right. Here's a little practical tip. And I want to tell a story. Practical tip, right? You train for that moment outside of that moment, right? So you're not going to train your kid to sit quietly in church by showing up to church and expect them to sit quietly. So this is one of the reasons why, like when our kids kind of graduated from the afternoon nap where they didn't take a nap anymore, we just still did afternoon quiet time. They're just like, hey, you got to go in your room for 30 minutes and read a book or draw or play quietly with your toys. The idea is just there's a quietness expected of you. And what you're doing in that moment is training. Now, when we're in a room with a bunch of people and I tell you we need to be quiet, you have built the capacity to do that. And again, mom and dad, it's your responsibility to build that capacity in your kids. Are they going to love it? Probably not at first, but they do have that capacity and they will be a blessing to you and others as you draw that capacity out of them and train them in it. Story, you know, okay, so what do you do with a 5, 6, 7-year-old or 10-year-old? in church? Well, just a few weeks ago, a family came up to me after church. I want to say their son, they have a bunch of kids, but the one in particular is maybe 5 or 6. And he handed me a little piece of paper. And the mom said, hey, he wanted to give this to you. And it was a drawing of me that he had made during church, right? It was a picture of the front of our church. And there I was, a little stick figure with a pulpit in front of me and a Bible and a cross. I mean, the kid had just like taken in the moment and drawn it on a piece of paper. And it was a really awesome little 5-year-old version of here's Pastor Bob up front preaching. That's a kid paying attention. Yeah. Now, you know, of course, the sermon I was preaching, he's not taking it all in the same way that an adult is, but there's still a beautiful thing there that in that moment he's engaged in what's happening. Visually, he's cluing in, like the things that stand out on his drawing are there's a big cross on the stage. Like, there's important visual symbols that he's identifying and saying, this is happening. So I think if you just tell your 5-year-old, hey, here's a piece of paper and a pen, just draw something during the sermon, you know, or whatever. Even for our daughters, you know, when they've, as they've grown up, they've taking notes when they've gotten to the age where they can write for themselves. We give them a little notebook and say, hey, take some notes, write down the verses that Pastor Bob uses or the main points of the sermon. You'd be amazed how much kids can take away and retain when you just start building that into them.
Yeah. I love getting those. I've gotten a few of those pictures. It's always funny how they interpret my hairstyle.
Everybody draws your hair differently.
Yeah. I mean, I used to rock a faux hawk like back when I was in college, but I didn't think I had one now, but sometimes I don't know. But, that's a great point too, of allowing your child to engage in a way where, maybe it's not the, you know, adult taking notes, but it is, you can tell that their brain is engaging what they're seeing in the environment around. Something we do too is we provide a pretty simple kind of note sheet template for kids. And there's some different things on it where write down the, for the older ones, hey, write down the main point or some of the points. There's also the section of just some key words, you know, God, Christ, Bible, grace, salvation. Anytime they hear these words, hey, circle the word. And so again, it's just a fun way to keep their mind in tune with what's going on around them, even if they don't necessarily, you know, fully articulate every, you know, brilliant point that I make during my sermons. Again, as we were saying, it's what are they catching? What is the formation? Even if it's not like this perfect cognitive experience for them, they're still engaged with their environment in a way that's teaching them to engage the Lord. So there are different strategies you can use to help your kids do that well.
Let's talk about the flip side now and say, hey, this is also why it's important as a church and why we put a lot of time, energy, and effort toward having a robust kids ministry that is not just childcare.
Yeah,
Dusty,
yeah.
You know that one of my pet peeves is when people say, hey, do you guys have childcare here? No, we don't have that. No. We have a kids ministry called Cornelio Kids.
Yeah.
It's not babysitting. It's spiritual formation for kids. We care a lot about, we put some of our better musicians in charge of leading kids singing. We put some of our better teachers in charge of doing kids stories. We ask every one of our members to serve as a volunteer in kids ministry because we really believe in the really significance of that ministry in the church, and that the adults need to see it as something more than just I gotta spend an hour with some 8-year-olds, but that there's a sense of no, I'm investing in the spiritual formation, the discipleship, and the biblical understanding of these children.
Yeah, you're not on the B team if you're serving in your kids ministry at your church, right?
Amen.
Those are some of the best people and some of the most formational years in anybody's soul.
I mean, you're forming the church leaders of tomorrow. It is significant because, I mean, we're responsible for the future of our church there in the sense of like these kids, we are forming them and we want future elders and deacons and church planners and disciple makers. And so that investment now, I can't remember the exact place that this research came from, but there's a study that found that, like when a kid graduates from high school, goes on to college and retains their faith, a vibrant faith, one thing that they have in common is that they have significant relationships with at least 5 other adults outside their parents who have invested in them spiritually. And so that point you were making earlier, Bob, that those kinds of relationships, you really do have an impact on a child, even though parents are the primary disciplers, that Mm-hmm. They're not doing that solo. And, right. and the investment that you make is significant for that kid to remain with a vibrant faith once they, you know, get to a place where they leave the home.
Yeah, I think it's really important for churches. We put a lot of time and resources into what are our kids learning? What are they singing? What should they be? What could we be doing better? Like, what could we be enhancing back there so that we get the right kind of stuff into their head? We don't care if they can retain it right now. We don't really care if they can recite it all. We just want to make the most of every opportunity to get it in there so that later on, Chris, like you're saying, when they become teenagers and follow Jesus at 25, that stuff's in there that they can draw on, right?
And there's an important role here. I think about my mom when I was growing up and my dad was a pastor. My mom for years and years and years taught the three-year-old class at our church. And here's the amazing ministry that she had was if you're a parent of a two or three-year-old, right, you know that that's the age at which kids, like you drop them off and they lose it because they're like, mom's leaving forever. You know, they're old enough to, it's not stranger danger, it's separation anxiety where it's like, you're leaving me in this room with these strangers I don't know. And so my mom, I mean, monthly would have a story of just like her having to look at a mom and be like, hey, walk away, go to church. Your kid's going to be fine in 5 minutes. Like they're bawling right now and it feels like the world is ending, but trust me, once you walk away, they're going to be fine. And right, we need those mothers and fathers in the church, those grandmothers and grandfathers who can say like, hey, go worship the Lord. Your kid's going to be okay. We got this for a few hours, you know, and kids need that experience of having to go through that. Like that actually builds character for a kid to go, oh, there's another adult here who's trustworthy and reliable and mom's coming back to get me in 60 minutes and it's not the end of the world, you know? And so even just the ministry of caring alongside parents for kids is a really significant ministry to both parents and children. And so I think it really is crucial that we see and that if you're a church leader or someone who's shaping the culture of a church, that you help people around you see the kids' ministry as something that's a significant discipleship component and that's not childcare or just, you know, putting in time so that adults can do their thing. But this really is investing in the next generation.
That's going to do it for this conversation. The goal of this podcast is to equip our own church for discipleship and mission. So if you're a Christian or a church leader in another context, we thank you for listening in and we pray that this conversation might be helpful to you as you minister in your context. We love to hear from listeners. So if you have thoughts, questions, or future podcast topics, send an email to podcast@cdomaha.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next Wednesday for another episode of the Wednesday Conversation.